The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Tell me what's going on.
I never thought I'd be calling you.
I hope you're going to agree with me.
Well, no, I'm sorry.
I'm not into predictions, but you want me to make a prediction?
But you're a psychologist. Do you have some advice?
I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
Yeah, I really didn't want to call you about this.
All right, let's answer your question and give you some good news.
Yay.
You're my second favorite Italian person.
You seem like an honest guy.
A lot of people suffer when they have to listen to me. So at least you're getting your daily dose of suffering right now.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Your fitless expert. I've got a microphone. I'm not afraid to use it. I was going to say I know how to use it, but there could be some debate on that. Good to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In, our Friday version. Look Back Friday. It really is kind of a misleading show title. It should be Listen Back Friday. We take previous calls, and they are edited at the hands, capable hands of Andrew Krucek. And he just has informed me a number of times that he takes away my pre-call chit-chat. When somebody calls in, attempting to make them feel comfortable, relaxed, as what I'm supposed to do, you know, as a shrink, we chit-chat a little bit, talk a little bit about them and tease them a little bit, but he cuts all that out, and he goes straight to the nitty-gritty of the question. I suspect also that he cuts out large parts of my wisdom, because I've noticed when looking back at these calls, there's not a whole lot of wisdom in them, so I'm assuming he has cut it out, I hope. So we'll get to those calls shortly, but for now, let's do our opening monologue. Many, many years ago, the book was published in 1990. I wrote a book called Back to the Family. It was the second book that I had written. A fella at a local children's hospital decided his idea was to interview strong families. Families identified by National State Teachers of the Year in all 50 states as the most admirable families they knew. And much of this was based upon the children, the maturity, the responsibility, the moral level, the admirability of the children. So as they said, this family is worth interviewing. He went around and interviewed the parents and oftentimes the kids. You'd think that with these very strong families and heavy religious component too, which, by the way, the first publisher rejected the book because of that. Yeah, the editor said that she just thought that people don't live that way anymore and it's not realistic. And I wanted to say, well, if people don't live that way anymore and you have all these folks identified as the most admirable families that the teachers knew, and religion was at the very base of who they are, well, wouldn't you think that would say something? I guess we had to go out and get people that were just messing up their lives and then put the book together and tell them, have them tell other people how to live their lives. One of the interesting findings, very interesting finding, you would assume that these parents, again, who were identified as just responsible, caring, loving, stable, well-adjusted, good folk, decent people, would have had similar upbringings as children, kind of shaped them into who they are today. In the main, that was true. However, there was a significant minority of the parents who had very ugly, nasty, I dare say traumatic, childhoods. Alcohol-ridden, conflict-ridden, broken marriages. These are kids that you would look at and say, what are the likelihood that these people are going to grow up to be wonderful parents? And they did. What does that say? A couple of things. One, the resiliency of the human spirit. God knows that we got to be made of tough stuff because we face tough stuff. So a lot of these families, a lot of these parents, moved beyond their own ugly childhoods to become great parents. They did. 20% of them, maybe 25% of them. There was another factor involved, and I labeled it in the book Reverse Resolve. A number of the parents commented, saying that as they experienced the turbulence of their own childhood, they became more determined as they got older and were more able to digest what was going on with more mature mind. They became more determined that if they ever became parents, they were not going to have their children experience the same. In essence, they decided to rise above the very ugliness of their childhood because they saw how that ugliness affected them, and they didn't want to do it to their own children, which is quite counter to the notion that is now pretty prevalent in expert-type circles, which says if you had a bad childhood, you're going to have a bad adulthood. You're going to think you're okay, but really there's too much percolating down in your psyche, and you're just right on the edge. We interviewed a very, very thoughtful young man, probably, I think, one of the most thoughtful in the book. And we asked him, I don't think at the time, I don't know how old he was, late teens, early 20s. He said that my mother never had much affection growing up. Then he said, my mother is the most affectionate person I know. He was asked, how do you think that came about? And he said, I think one of the most insightful observations of the book, she had to teach herself to be affectionate. Isn't that beautiful? You would think, hey, no models. How's she going to do this? How's she going to know it? Yeah, well, she had the rest of her brain working. And the rest of her brain said, attention, affection is good. Affection is good. And even though it might not come as natural to me as it would have come had I been raised with stable, affectionate parents, I know it's important. I know this is something I need to do with my own children. And her pretty much grown son said, my mother is the most affectionate person I know. She taught herself. Isn't that great? I loved it. I loved it. I know there are those of you listening who didn't have the greatest of childhoods. There's no question in my mind. And I would wonder if you're nagged with doubts that say, can I do this? Can I be a good parent? I'm trying, but maybe some of my foibles and my frailties, all that is just, that's just my upbringing come back to haunt me. You do not have to be bound by your upbringing. You don't. Is it an influence? Yeah, it can be. Depending upon your temperament, some people are much more influenced by the way they were raised, good and bad, than others. But you are not bound by your past at all. And I would assume that many of you listening to this program are faithful people. And if you had a turbulent, chaotic upbringing, chances are your own parent or parents were not that faithful. You're now more faithful. You're a very different person spiritually than you were raised with. That's a radical difference. The Holy Spirit stepped in here. The Holy Spirit's not going to go, oh, shoot, I really wanted to transform you. But you, oh, You just had a bad childhood. Shoot. Beyond my power. Can't do anything about that. Wish I'd have got here sooner. Do not be bound by your past. Because God has left a whole lot of you intact to make the kinds of changes you need to make. I'm Dr. Ray.
I was just hoping you might give me some insight.
I don't know.
Keep saying that. Are you a doctor, aren't you?
I don't know.
Dr. Ray has more great advice coming up. Don't go anywhere. And that's a doctor's order.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at solidarityhealthshare.org or at 844-313-4999.
Is there a universal call to prayer? The Catholic Catechism tells us man is in search of God. God, in the act of creation, called every being into existence from nothingness. Even after man sinned and lost his likeness to God, he remained an image of his Creator and never lost his desire for the one who called him into existence. All religions attest to man's essential search for God. The Catechism points out, however, that God calls us first to that mysterious encounter, prayer. God always initiates. Man's first step in the process is to respond. Prayer is a reciprocal call. Throughout the whole history of salvation, the covenant drama unfolds. The revelation of prayer in the Old Testament comes between the fall and the restoration of man. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
If you believe in the power of prayer, Ave Maria Radio invites you to look at their website to submit a prayer request at avemariaradio.net. Your prayer requests are shared with hundreds at the Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, the Servants of God's Love, the Monastery of the Blessed Sacrament Cloistered Nuns, the Family of Faith Apostolate, and the staff of Ave Maria Radio. Just go to avemariaradio.net and click on the Community tab to submit your prayer request today.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, and I knew you'd follow through. You seem like an honest guy.
Good to have you with me. Doctor's in. Look back Friday. Kind of talking like I do on the phone when I call a guy. No verbs. Just talking nouns. Jim. Ray. Get together. My place. 8. Cards. Good. See you. Not a single verb to mess up that manly conversation. Let's go to Michelle, calling from Washington. Michelle has been told she better just be a little more Christian.
How do you respond to someone who says that you are not acting very Christian-like or you should be more Christian? So the scenario is, try to put it as simple as possible, you have 4 generations: great-grandma, mother-in-law, my husband and myself, and grandchildren. Great-grandma tells me multiple times, you should be more Christian towards your mother-in-law. And I'm trying to distance myself and my children away from mother-in-law because, not just because she's a narcissistic borderline personality disorder with bipolar, but it's the way she acts of telling my children, my sons, you're going to grow up to be a worthless man. Daughter, your grandchild, you are going to marry a worthless man. She says, all dads are worthless. Men are worthless. She calls my husband bad names in front of my children.
She's that blatant about all this, Michelle?
Yes.
This is not subtle stuff. This is not just an attitude that's hard to take. This is a hostile, aggressive, verbally nasty, put-downish style.
Yes, and everything towards me is very passive-aggressive, but she'll be very verbal that way towards her own dad and my husband. And there's you know, there's a huge story behind all of that and such and such and such. But my point is, when they come at me, when I say I don't want her near my children, and in the future, since great-grandparents have died, the thought is maybe mother-in-law will move closer to us, and now she'll be able to see the kids more often. And I don't want her anywhere near my kids, especially alone. If she's willing to say that in front of me, what is she willing to say when I'm not there? So when they come back at me with, well, you should be more Christian-like towards your mother-in-law and accept her for what she is, that's my question. How do you respond to that?
As an aside, is your husband in agreement with you?
No, because he can't stand up to his mom quite as much because he's just used to her always saying those things. So it's annoying to him, but he has. We've gone to marriage therapy, and he does believe that she is toxic, but he can't say no yet. And I'm trying to preemptively.
What about the kids? What about the kids?
They're under 10, so they don't know yet. They don't.
Well, I mean, what does he say about her effect on the kids? Does he think it's not as serious as you do?
Yeah, because he's never witnessed it the way that I have, because I've always taken vacations and gone down to visit her without him. And she'll only ever say those things when he's not in the room. Okay. Or she'll say, you're the bad word in front, to his face type of thing. But he just, okay. He's in that point where he's like, if I admit, just like you're.
Well, he can't write off his mother. That's what he's saying. I can't write off my mother. I know what she is. I've lived with her. I was raised by her. I roll with her. Now, to answer your question, when someone says, you need to be more Christian, first of all, I would ask them, what do you mean by that? And then, of course, you got partially an answer when they said, you need to understand her and tolerate her and treat her right. And then you say, how does it be more Christian if someone is hurting your children and you're not protecting them? How is that? I would ask them.
That was exactly my thought of what I would have said.
Yeah. Now, here's the other thing on this, too. When people say you should be more Christian, oftentimes that translates into meaning you need to treat me more like I want to be treated. That's what they mean. You need to be nicer, as I define it. If, in fact, in your clear, objective, as best you can be opinion, this woman truly is hurtful to your children. She just mean and nasty and does things that are unpredictable and ugly. Then probably it has nothing to do with Christianity. What I might do is only have the kids anywhere near her when your husband is present.
Right.
That's it. You tell your husband, I understand, it's your mom. She has her own problems, but she's a different person when you're not around. So,
he acknowledges that.
Okay. So then he should agree. Yeah. He should say, okay, Michelle, I will make sure that there will be no contact with mom without all of us there. And then if she does it, he can't do that?
No.
He says you have to go there by yourself with the kids?
Well, due to moving around and stuff like that, I no longer take the kids down to see her by ourselves. But he can't say, he very rarely can say no to her. So when she wants the kids, he gives her the kids.
Oh, you got a marriage struggle here, don't you?
Yes, and we've already been in marriage therapy just for this. Right. But the only situation that has not changed has been ever since.
Well, then I'm not going to comment on that. I'm not going to comment on that. I'm simply going to say, to respond to people who say you need to be more Christian, and I would ask them to define that. What does that mean? You ever notice the irony in a statement like that? It isn't one that is meant to guide you. It isn't one to help you to get closer to God. Here's what I think you need to do to really
to really boost your faith.
No, no, no.
It says you're not doing what I decide you need to do to be a Christian, which is in many respects using the word nice. You're not being nice, and therefore, by extension, you call yourself a Christian. You can't get a read in a situation like that, which sounds very complex. You can't get a read on exactly what is going on with the mother-in-law. If Michelle were to come into my office and we spent an hour or two talking about it, I'm sure pieces of the puzzle would fall into place. But in Michelle's description, this is a woman who can be very deceptive and perhaps even verbally treacherous. So her goal is to protect my children from whatever this woman might say when she's in an unsupervised position. And that is not an unchristian act. The person who said to her, "You need to accept her as she is." Well, does that mean that you need to accept anybody as they are? Let's say that someone is a threat to your child's sexual innocence. Well, that's who they are. Do you need to accept them as who they are? Meaning, you need to simply allow them to have access to your family? Yeah, you can love them, of course. And you don't condemn them. That's God's judgment. But for anyone who says you need to accept them as they are, they're really saying, I think this situation you need to accept them as they are. That is not a general Christian operating principle. You need to accept anyone as they are, because some people are very dangerous. Some people are incredibly destructive, especially to the well-being of children. For example, let's say you have a grandparent who thinks that you're just a little too restrictive regarding computer games or what your 7-year-old can see on television. This grandparent decides, I've got to expose my grandchildren to more of the world, because his mother, his father, they're way too out of touch with the direction of the culture, and my poor grandkids getting stunted. So you've gotten wind that when he goes over there without your supervision, grandma or grandpa is going to let him watch things you would never let within 50 feet of your house. They went out and they bought him video games that are vile. You don't want those games anywhere near your little 7-year-old's innocence. Do you need to accept them as they are? That's who they are, you know. That's what they think. They believe that you're misguided. You're way too restrictive. You're stunting his cultural, social growth. And it's up to me to broaden his moral horizons. Well, are you going to accept that or not? And if you don't accept that, are you not a Christian? I can't believe that you're not allowing your kids to go visit their grandparents without you. That's awful. They would love to see their grandparents, just them and their grandparents. And yes, you would have no problems with that if the grandparents cooperated with your, well, I was going to say very reasonable, but they don't have to be very reasonable. These are your conditions. You're the parent. And obviously they don't think they're reasonable because they're trying to undercut them. But that doesn't matter, because it's your right. And if they disrespect your right and they say, I've got to undo your parenting, then it's not being unchristian to say, I'm sorry. Well, you're not even sorry. To say, I'm going to supervise my kids' visits. And I think that's the trouble Michelle's got right now. Her husband isn't agreeable.
Father Benedict Groeschel.
I often go back to my childhood. In church, we love to be reverent, to Christ present in the Eucharist, to Christ on the cross. But I was also impressed by the reverence of my friends in the Salvation Army. They had a little band, and I used to walk past the band on Sunday morning on my way to church. And I was just a child, but I said, you know, they're trying to pray to God. They're showing reverence to God. All this was reverence. Now what do I see? I hear one irreverence after another. And week after week, month after month, the media churns out things that make fun of religion in general and make fun of Christianity in particular, and particularly make fun of the Catholic Church. No class. Absolutely no class.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
Let us strive to know the Lord. Quick question to you and me right now. Is that what you and I are doing every single day? When you and I wake up every day, do we strive to know Jesus or not? In the Old Testament, in the same book of Hosea, a little bit later on, it's in chapter 14, the Lord says through the prophet, "My people perish." Or in another translation, "My people are being destroyed because of a lack of knowledge." Not a lack of data. We got tons of data. Not a lack of information. We got a lot of information. Not just about things that are happening in the world. We got a lot of data, a lot of knowledge, a lot of information about God. But not a lot of intimacy with God. Not a lot of relationship with God. Not a lot of friendship. That's the cry of God's heart. God wants to give himself to us in the incredible gift of friendship. And we're not taking advantage of it.
I wrote a book on adoption. And one of the questions I wrestled with, not directly in the book, is that when do you tell, at what point, how do you bring the subject up? You tell a highway that it's adopted. You see those signs, you know, adopted by North Canton Kiwanis. You get, when the highway gets to the point where it says, man, I don't look like the Kiwanis, you know. It's a question. When do you tell these highways they're adopted? This is Look Back Friday. Let's go looking back on another call. Let's see with, I'm going to say with Monica. And she's got some struggles with, well, being at peace.
Earlier in the program, you said that if you are seeking after God's will, contentment usually follows. I had a really hard time for quite a number of years trying this. I don't know if it was the strictness of the piety that I was following, or if it was I was seeking God's will, or if I was just straight up hungry. I don't know, but it was my early adulthood, and I went to Mass regularly. I went to confession. I was pretty scrupulous. But it wasn't until I finally, with the grace of God, converted my husband and became and married him, then things settled down. But during all of this time, I've remained a good Catholic and done my best, and yet I could never figure out what was so miserable back then.
Did you figure it out now?
Not really.
So that's why you're calling me. I got to figure it out for you.
Uh-huh.
All righty. I got an idea. You tell me if I'm right or wrong, okay?
Okay.
You said something significant, and it just shot right by you. But I, being a highly trained male listener, listening to women, you said, I don't know if I confused... If I confuse doing God's will with piety, that was similarly to what you said. I'm paraphrasing, but that's what you said. Mm-hmm. Did you think that pursuing God's will could be found in doing pious things? Making sure you pray your rosary, making sure perhaps you go to daily mass, making sure you read the lives of the saints, making sure that you send out things on your email that is kind of prayer change. All those things that are good in and of themselves, they are good. But they are not the core of what it means to be a follower of Christ.
and maybe you elevated them to indicating how good a Christian you were, and you're thinking, I'm doing all this stuff, and I'm still struggling with life. I'm still not content. I'm still frustrated. I'm still scrupulous. I still feel like I'm inadequate and inept and a sinner. Was that happening?
Yeah, that sounds pretty logical, but why?
Because I think you may not have ever wrapped your soul and your head around the idea that God loves you beyond comprehension, and that these beautifully pious things that you're doing are good, but that's not necessarily what it means to live in God's will. It means kindness or charity or forgiving, those kinds of things that would bring you peace. You know, if I, for example, at 3 o'clock every day, do a particular pious prayer, that's good. But it would bring me more peace to get along better with a relative who I think is a pain in the bucket. And if I just kind of get better at getting along with them somehow, some way, because they're part of my life, that'll bring me more peace. It's the love that permeates your life for others that will bring you the peace. I get a ton of folks in my office, believe it or not, who are very, very expressively Catholic. Everything they do is Catholic. They go to daily mass, and they pray the rosary in Aramaic while they levitate, and they read the lives of saints in the original language. They do all this stuff. And they're unhappy in their marriage, or they're miserable because one of their adult children has left the faith, or whatever it is, and they're thinking to themselves, I've done all these good Catholic things. Why do I feel this way? And I suspect that's kind of what you were saying, right? Where's the peace that's supposed to come from me doing all this good Catholic stuff? Well, I think it goes a lot deeper than that. I think it's a beautiful confidence that God loves you beyond anything you can comprehend. You can't figure it out. His love is a love that's unlike anything we know. And that peace, that confidence that he says, do these things for me, love for me, live for me, and you'll spend all eternity in a bliss that you can't even imagine. That in and of itself, if we truly knew that, in and of itself, we would have a peace that would surpass anything. I may have truncated. It's, you know, back when I was in grad school, they always said you have to listen to your therapy sessions with your supervisor so you can analyze what you said, how you sounded, the direction you went, what you picked up on, what you missed. And they were very uncomfortable sessions. I don't like listening to myself because I see all kinds of things that are habits, modes of expression, where I missed what the person was actually trying to say and I went off on some wrong tangent. I hate that. And Look Back Friday does that. And I think I did that with Monica. It's possible she was speaking of something more broadly. And this is the attitude of God. I kept my part. Now you keep yours. I've tried to be a faithful follower, not just in devotions, but in living. And I've noticed here that things aren't gone as well for me as I'd like. No, as this. See, I think that's a uniquely kind of American attitude. Because historical Christian understanding has been, things like take up your cross. They persecuted me, they're going to persecute you. They're suffering. It's not saying we welcome this, but it's a reality. God isn't saying here, I'll fill up your glass here. That may not always happen. Some of the most beautiful Christians I've known have been bludgeoned by life. Does that mean that somewhere underneath them
they're real sinners, you know. That's like what Job's friend said to him. You know, you say you didn't do these things, but I'll bet you did. Obviously, because, you know, God's taken it to you. So you must not have been so good yourself there, buddy boy. Buddy boy, that was my mom's favorite when she lectured me. You know, buddy boy. So I think it's broader than that. And I didn't have time to explain it with Monica. And I didn't have time to explain it now because the break is telling me to be quiet. But I'm going to make a couple more comments on it before we go to the next call on this Look Back Friday with me, Dr. Ray Guarendi. The doctor is in.
Call to Communion.
Through EWTN Radio, we talk to audiences all over the world. One thing I've found out is everybody in the whole world has the same set of questions. They live the same human life. They all want meaning. They all want love. They all want significance. They want forgiveness. That's the most fascinating thing to me. The same answers work wherever you are throughout the world because we're all children of God.
Called to Communion with Dr. David Anders. This afternoon, 2 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
The breadth of power that liberal governors such as Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan and Andrew Cuomo in New York seek to wield against private citizens during this current pandemic is frightening. Contrary to their views, our federal constitutional rights don't go away in an emergency. These governors feel only a nominal constraint by our Constitution, as evidenced by the restrictions they have imposed on our liberty. Under the banner of public health, they believe that their power is plenary and that the Constitution has little role, if any, in curtailing that power. They are mistaken. Indeed, there is no pandemic exception to the fundamental liberties guaranteed by the Constitution. If the courts, and more importantly, we the people who ultimately control the fate of these politicians at the ballot box, were to simply accept the governor's actions and acquiesce to their power grab, then it is the fiat of the governors and not the Constitution that is the supreme law of the land. We aren't willing to surrender our freedoms so easily. We filed multiple federal civil rights lawsuits against both governors in federal courts in Michigan and New York. In the final analysis, if we don't demand our God-given inalienable rights, then they will be lost. Fight for freedom or lose it. It's that simple. I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, bringing you this Faith and Freedom Minute. You can learn more about the American Freedom Law Center and its fight for your faith and freedom by visiting our website and liking us on Facebook.
To have you with me. I just want to make a couple more comments on Monica's struggling to have peace in... Initially, I think that was part of it, that she figured she was a very, very good Catholic because she was very, very good with her devotions. That's part of it. That's not even the main part of it, I don't think. Like everything says, we will be judged on how we loved. So, taking it a step further, I have come across Catholics and Christians who have said that I've really tried hard to live for Christ, and why isn't my life working out? Why am I unhappy? Why did this happen? Now, let's take it beyond the realm of suffering. Let's take it into the realm of emotional distress, where somebody's just not happy, not content, and their faith isn't bringing them any peace or contentment. They can't understand why. What is going on here? Well, the faith is not a guarantee that you're going to think right. Many, if not most, of the people who walk in my office who are faithful Christians have an awful lot of thinking problems. The way they interpret other people's behavior, the way they interpret events, the way they look at life, the conclusions they draw about things. And their faith isn't necessarily making them think clearly. They're not thinking clearly. Their faith helps them in other areas. Maybe trust in God or or looking to eternity or being charitable with others. But when you don't think well and you have all kinds of ideas about people and about events and about circumstances that just are not reasonable, they're self-defeating, then yeah, you could be a very religious person, but that thinking is still hounding you. And God doesn't say, I'm going to take away all your bad thinking. He'll replace some of it with a broader perspective, with a perspective of maybe gratitude that you know him. And gratitude can help with peace for sure. But it doesn't necessarily take away the way you're thinking or the way you have thought. Or you don't even realize how this thinking is doing you in. All right, let's go one more here. Barbara has a son who has kids with two different ladies and a whole bunch of stuff.
My son is involved almost continually in a bitter custody. It's already decided by the courts his custody, but seems like there's always some sort of hassle going on between him and his ex over the children. And he's living with a woman who doesn't seem to want to help him with the situation. I think she makes it worse. And now that the schools are out, the children were exchanged by the school bus, and usually they didn't have to deal with each other very much. You know, they would just get off the bus at one house and get on the bus. But now, without the schools being in session, they're having to get picked up. And his girlfriend won't go meet the ex-wife. And then my son goes to pick up his children when he gets off work. And now his ex-wife says, you didn't meet at the proper time and you can't have your children. And it's a big mess. But I don't know how to help, what advice. I don't know what to suggest. I want to help. I want to be there for my son, but I don't know what I can possibly do.
I don't either, because what you're describing is a guy who says, gee, I want to have a life with my kids. But by the way, I'm going to live with some girl who doesn't have any loyalty toward my kids, who obviously doesn't like my wife, my ex-wife, you want to call her that. So what he's done is he's dramatically complicated his life by moving in with this woman. Has he not?
Absolutely. And he has a child with her, so it's extra complicated.
Oh.
He's been with her for about 5 years now, and it's, you know, you can always see it up and down. You know, you can see the ups and downs. And even like last night when he tried to go get his kids, when he got home without his kids, she accused him of chasing after his ex-wife. So it's just almost an impossible situation he's in.
What are you going to do about that, Barbara?
And then we invited him. We said, please just come home tonight. You know, come home and stay here. Just, you know, just let's think through this and try to come up with, you know, a plan. Because he was very emotional. And he says, I can't come there and be around you guys because of the virus. And that's the last I've talked to him. And it's just upsetting.
Talk to you over the phone?
Well, yeah, but he was just so emotional, of course, because he'd come up, you know, he knows that it's so difficult. He's not getting the support at home. He's not getting his children. He's just, you know, at
when is he going to decide? When is he going to decide that this live-in relationship is not making his life any better?
I don't know, and that's what I keep asking. But what I think I know from conversations I've had with him is he knows that I don't want to say he was 100% at fault with his marriage falling apart, but he wasn't a bad husband. I think he was just neglectful. You know what I mean?
Well, that would be bad.
He wasn't mean or bad. He was neglectful
be bad?
Yeah.
That's like, okay. Yeah. What you're saying is he wasn't a violent husband.
Yes, that's what I mean. I mean, he just did his own thing because it's kind of what he grew up seeing, you know, and he thought it worked for mom and dad, but he didn't know.
Why does it surprise you, Barbara? Barbara, why does it surprise you that after he, at least as you report it, after he totally just basically
ruined his marriage through his self-centeredness. Why does it surprise you that after this marriage, he's still ruining things? Why does that surprise you?
It doesn't, but what I'm saying is I think he's giving everything he's got to try to make the second relationship work to a fault of not dealing with his problem at hand with her. He wants to make this one work with his son, and he's trying to make it work, so I think he's kowtowing to the second woman, you know, trying to make up for what he didn't do.
Trying to make a relationship work that he's living with her under hers, mine, and ours kid situation.
You know.
When he calls you and he's complaining and he's upset, I would simply have one question that I would repeat over and over again.
Okay.
What do you want to do about it?
Perfect.
What do you want to do about it? Well, she says that I didn't pick her up, and now she's and the woman I'm living with, she's telling me that I'm doing. What do you want to do about it? Well,
right.
There's nothing I can do about it. There's nothing I can do about it, because as long as she thinks that way, then what are you going to do about that? I can't.
Right.
You know. So
right.
what he's telling you is that the situation is unfolding exactly as you think it would. He put himself into this situation with all kinds of complexities. And then he's saying, I don't like this. I don't like this at all. Why is it this way? Because this is exactly what you would expect given what you've done. You know, to piggyback off of that previous look back call where Monica was saying, I don't know why I don't have peace. One of the biggest destroyers of peace for people is that they cannot accept that they can't make other people be a certain way. They can't make them think a certain way. Oh, yeah, you can try to persuade and influence, but in the end, you usually have to make a decision. Is it over? Is it past my ability to do anything about this? And typically, I find that most people go on way too long trying to fix a situation. One of the things I've learned as a psychologist, which would probably be the exact opposite of what you would think I would have learned, which is I quit earlier. Because I am quicker to think this is beyond my ability to affect. I can't alter how this person acts. I can't convince them to be different. I can't do it. But yet so many folks, and you heard it with Barbara. In essence, she said, I got to do what I can to help. A lot of times that goes beyond that. Not just I got to do what I can to help. I got to do what I can to make it right. I got to fix it. And, okay, her son has been doing all this for what? For years? For years. And usually it's a situation that rears its ugly head, and maybe it resolves itself, or maybe it's just thrown on the pile of other situations when the new one comes up. And Barbara's thinking, okay, I gotta get him to see here. But the problem is, one of the big problems here is when you go away from the way God says to do things, and he's given us a beautiful moral system that works, then you're going to experience the results of telling God, I'm doing it my way, not yours. So here's her son who's got himself involved with a couple of women, and he's got this ex-girlfriend, and then now this one's mad at this one, and this one won't pick up the kid, and the kid is... I couldn't really follow all the details. There were too many. But essentially, he was feeling the natural results of his decisions, which were based upon, I'm going to live the moral existence I wish to live, which the culture says is now okay, and I'm going to ignore God's. Now, he may not even think there is a God, Or if he does think there's a God, he kind of thinks the God just sort of, I don't know, he watches everything and has no real input into how we would best live. I'm spiritual, not religious. So the struggle for Barbara, and I suspect it's going to continue, is I can't do anything about this. That's why I kept telling her, put it back on him. What do you want to do about this? Not what do I want to do about this. What do you want to do about this? Those of you who have older children, like Barbara does, you find out very quickly you cannot make them baptize their kid. You cannot make them get along in their marriage. You cannot stop them from spending money foolishly. And on and on and on. But what that does is it torments people. There's got to be a way to reach them. I think psychology is very guilty for conveying that conclusion. Because we have the techniques, we have the ways. Well, how many how-to books are out there? How to. All the implication is, here it is. Here's what you got to do. And it'll all work out the way you want it. What a big piece of misguidance. I can't do anything about this break, which is coming up.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you automatically own shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
I'm Dr. Stan Williams. Contemplate the universe with me.
There is a time for everything under heaven.
As moral agents, we exist in a universe that allows us to move in three space and one time dimensions called space-time. The paradox in which God has placed us allows us complete freedom of movement through the space dimensions, but we are constrained to move in only one direction through time. That irony of freedom and constraint forces upon us the natural law of causation. For every moral action we take in space, a moral consequence is delivered in time. In space, we can go forward or backward. But why, oh why, can't we go back in time and fix things? We really have no idea. But God knows, and one day you will too. At AveMariaRadio.net, under Resources, explore the universe with me. I'm Dr. Stan Williams.
Support for Ave Maria programming comes in part by CatholicCounselors.com. Self-help resources and support from Catholic telecounselors from the privacy of home. CatholicCounselors.com, helping your faith, life, and relationships flourish.
Get more information on today's guest and download the program from the Ave Maria Radio website, AveMariaRadio.net. And when your local radio signal is out of reach, listen live on the Ave Maria Radio app.
Oh, that guy has got quick fingers. Know who that is. Good to have you with me here, and we are just closing it up here. About a minute left, because I let that bumper music go on and on. I want to listen to that screaming Hammond organ. Thank you for visiting me in all the various places that you do. On my website, drray.com, the bookstore there, Facebook page, the TV show, Living Right with Dr. Ray, which is airing on the EWTN Global Catholic Television Network on Saturdays at 10 p.m. Eastern. And then they rerun it on 9 a.m. Eastern Tuesdays and 5 a.m. Eastern Fridays, which is the basic hide the kid in right field when he's 9 years old and he can't catch a ball.
That's the television version. You know, you got to figure that's 2 a.m. Pacific time. Nonetheless, those are people who, you know, basically are getting up in the middle of the night, and then they see me. I know what EWTN's doing. Put them back to sleep. That's what they're doing with that show. Good to have you with me. Thanks, Andrew, for all you do over there at Abe. And I do appreciate your company, good Lord permitting. Talk to you on Monday. Walk with God. It's an eternal walk. All other walks, no matter how nice, no matter how bad, are temporary. Only one eternal one.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.